WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Critic John Leonard has a review of the new book Cloak and Gown by Robin W. Winks. It's an historical look at the connection between Yale men and our country's intelligence organizations, the CIA, and its predecessor, the Office of Strategic Services.
If you think Yale has graduated more than its fair share of spooks, you're right. It all started with Nathan Hale. The first American spy was a Yale man, and it's not surprising that identical statues of him are to be found on Yale's old campus in New Haven and in front of CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. But Yale really got into the spy business up to its armpits during World War II. Professors of history, literature, and economics, and even the crew coach, went undercover themselves or recruited their students to derring do for the OSS. The Yale library was used as a front for a scam in Istanbul. At spy parties in wartime London, even the British joined in singing the Whiffenpoof song. At war's end, some of the derring doers went back to school, but more stayed on to start and staff the CIA, after which departments of anthropology and political science, newspapers and foundations and labor unions were eventually compromised just like the Yale Library. Americans abroad are no longer anywhere considered to be merely tourists. Robin W. Winks, himself a professor of history at Yale and a regular reviewer of spy fiction, wonders what it all means in Cloak and Gown, an ingratiating account of academics on the clandestine, from poor little lambs to black sheep to the occasional big bad wolf. Yale, of course, has always taken its civic responsibility seriously. Most of its children who went off to the covert wars were at worst what Winks calls sentimental imperialists, determined to bring the American message to a messy world by whatever means necessary, including bribery, forgery, fraud, and blackmail. By stopping short in 1961, though, Winks manages not to have to think about political assassination. But a few of those children were very odd birds indeed, and none odder than James Jesus Angleton, to whom Winks turns once he's done exploring the gaudy resentments of the FBI and explaining, yet again, the cleverness of ULTRA, the Nazi code-cracking ring. Before Angleton left Yale for counterintelligence, he was a serious poet. T.S. Eliot was a friend, and Thomas Mann came to lunch. During his years with the CIA, he was known variously, and for good reason, as the poet, mother, orchid, the gray ghost, the cadaver, and the fisherman. Forcibly retired in 1974, he still believed a Soviet mole had penetrated the nation's very cerebellum. He was, in a way, a casualty of the modernist culture of alienation. He had invented his own wasteland, what he called the wilderness of mirrors, in which spies looked at spies looking at spies, and thus made possible the lawless paranoias of a Watergate and an Ollie North. Winks tells some good stories, and he's firm on the crucial difference between historians and intelligence operatives. Historians have to be fair to the evidence. I don't know why he's so easy on Richard Bissell, another Yalie whose dirty tricks embarrassed old pros like Richard Helms and William Colby, nor why he doesn't even mention William F. Buckley, Jr., who met E. Howard Hunt in the CIA, nor why he's entirely silent on what the CIA did to Iran and Guatemala in the 1950s. But I do know he's altogether too avuncular. When the counterculture attacked our universities in the 1960s, the universities could hardly pretend they were ivory towers. They had long before been compromised, starting at Yale, in the library, with the poets.
Our book critic John Leonard writes about television for New York Magazine and is a columnist for New York Newsday. He reviewed Cloak and Gown by Robin W. Winks.